Hello everyone, this is Damiano, and from the other side of the world, okay, not really of the world, but you know, the other side of the sea, there is Jesse, and we are Into the Deep End podcast, both video and audio. Hello, so Jesse, what's going to be going on?
We're going to talk a little bit about what we've been playing, and we're going to cover a lot of this craziness of some gaming companies buying other gaming companies, and whether we're heading towards a two gaming company future, or what's happening. Why can't they stop spending money?
And we're also going to go over some games we've been playing, maybe, if there's enough time. Of course, there's always enough time to bitch about what we've been playing.
I have something spicy I want to kick us off with.
Okay, so then let's go with the spicy.
So, I've been playing Pokemon.
Okay.
Pokemon Legends Arceus.
Okay. I would pronounce it Arceus, so...
Oh,
okay.
See, this is... Oh, everyone's... I don't know. But anyway...
But I don't care.
The spice has begun already.
Pronounce it whatever you want. Okay.
It's my first Pokemon game.
No.
Ever. Have you played Pokemon before?
I think I did play it once, but I can't for the life of me remember what that was. But we're talking about like Game Boy years, so like, yeah, 1,000 years ago or something. So
yeah.
My experience barely counts as having played Pokemon.
Yeah.
So what was your first Pokemon cherry popping experience?
Oh, damn. That's some imagery right there.
That's the title of the podcast. Yes.
Horrendous.
We found it. You.
Yeah. I'm like you. I played probably, you know, the original on the Game Boy or something for a few minutes, and I've never been into it. And it's one of these sort of franchises that millennials always go on about. And I'm like, but it's for children, right? So anyway, I thought I want something shiny and new to play on the Switch OLED, which we talked about already. And
yes.
So I bought Pokemon, and I've played like probably about 4 hours of it. If I had played Pokemon games, this would be a really boring start. Like, there's a lot of, you can tell it's, see, I'm going to piss off a lot of people because it's developed with children in mind, right? And you can tell this because every Pokemon game has a big tutorial on how to catch Pokemon and stuff. And I mean, this tutorial lasts for like 3 hours.
3 hours? Whoa.
Very slowly, like, this is how you walk here, and this is what you do, and I mean, I've still not got all the abilities, really, but it is like, a little bit like Zelda Breath of the Wild, but I also think that pretty much any Nintendo game is like Zelda Breath of the Wild, because they just copy and paste. It looks like, if I was to show you, there's like some footage up now, but if you look in the background at grass and hills and stuff, and you like forgot it was a Pokemon game, you would think it's Breath of the Wild, because like the power of the Switch is basically, oh, we can draw green grass, but nothing else. Like, yeah, you creep around, and the story's probably interesting because it's set like 2,000 years before the rest of them, like when Pokemon were still wild. And so they're kind of like dangerous creatures, and it's kind of set in a kind of feudal Japan type vibe. It's okay. Yeah, it's okay. I don't know what else to say about it. Any questions?
Well, I know lots of people have been complaining about the graphics, actually. I've seen some discourse, the dreaded discourse on Twitter, about people saying, the graphic doesn't matter as long as it's artistically fine, it's artistically interesting, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, something that we've been hearing about for like 30 years or something. So what do you think of it graphically? You say it looks okay. So
It depends. I've been playing it handheld. The character models and I mean, it's what you'd expect from a Nintendo Switch game. And the Nintendo Switch is like, what, 5 years old at this point? And it was underpowered when it came out. So it just looks like Breath of the Wild looks maybe a little bit worse. Like, the environments, the characters look fine. But then again, it's also rendering like 5 million Pokemon everywhere. So... I don't know. I don't think they're that bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think anyone will get angry if we say that, you know, the Pokemon series, I would say, is mainly aimed at younger gamers. I think it's an objective fact.
Yeah.
I don't think there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if anyone older enjoys Pokemon, I mean, what's the problem? I don't see anything wrong. Just play your shit. Well, if you're done with your spiciness, I might also, pick a couple of chili and add a bit of spiciness, because I've been playing Vertigo.
Oh, I'm really, really interested, because this is Pendulo.
Yeah.
Right? Now, did you play Black Sad?
I actually do have it on Steam, but I haven't played it yet. I've heard someone says it's okay, others say it's still pretty bugged.
It's not a great game. Mainly because of the technical issues. I mean, I played at launch, but yeah, it's kind of like a Telltale game without the budget. Mm. Which is a shame, because I was looking forward to it, but... I actually really wanted to get around to playing Vertigo, so I'd love to hear your take on it.
So, first things first, I'm quite a fan of the movie.
Okay, yeah, good movie.
Probably one of my favorite from Alfred Hitchcock. And just a fun trivia, the funny thing that happened, that when it was distributed in Italy, they changed the title altogether. I don't know why, because they could have just kept it as it is, because it almost sounds like an Italian word anyway. But yeah, they changed it, and basically the title spoils the plot. That's great. The title that spoils the plot is fantastic. So in Italian, it's called The Woman Who Lived Twice, basically.
Oh, so there's no point watching the film then?
Yes, that's great. I mean, of all the titles I could have picked, they picked the one that fucking spoils the movie outright. That's great. Okay, anyway. So I'm a fan of the movie, but I went into it not really expecting anything. So I'm not like, he's mad because the game doesn't follow the movie. It doesn't follow the movie. Of course it doesn't follow. It's inspired by the movie, so it doesn't have to follow the movie. So the problem is that the game basically plays like a stepchild of Heavy Rain and Life is Strange.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
A game that has all the negative aspects of both titles and none of the positive aspects.
Oh. But look, yeah. Life is Strange is like one of my favorite games of all time.
Yes, I know.
So...
Now, I'm not going to go into the negative aspect of this game. That's not the point. We're going to be here for like 2 hours. So, my point is, your interaction with the game is already of the kind of move the mouse to drink the milk, move the mouse to rotate the doorknob, and shit like that, which I hate. I mean, I don't hate, but I find completely pointless. I mean, it's like you're directly insulting me and wasting my time. But okay. The rest of the interactions is basically, walking around and interacting with stuff, but there's no puzzle. So it's, again, your description of a Telltale game with a very little budget might probably also apply to Vertigo, I think. So there's no puzzles. You're just walking around finding a hotspot to interact with, and then the story goes on. There are choices, but the problem is that the choices are kind of strange, in that you don't really understand when you're making a choice. And when you're just selecting dialogue that you have to select anyway, because otherwise it's continue. So at times you find yourself thinking, I mean, like pausing and saying, oh, which of these four options do I have to ask him? Do I have to ask this guy? Because it may, you know, it might change the plot. But it doesn't change the plot. There are just four options that you have to go through each one of them. And it doesn't change anything. Which order you pick? So sometimes you're just wasting time, like trying to decide, oh, what do I have to do? But there is no decision. And the game never clarifies that. At least I don't think it does. Or at least it doesn't do that in the right way. I don't know, because there's no tutorial, so it doesn't explain anything. So maybe I had to read the manual. Anyway. But yes. The other big problem I have is that Pendulo doesn't really seem to be aware of their limitations. Because the game, the environments look pretty good, especially the houses. I love the design of the houses, or design. They got someone very good to do that. But the characters look like shit. Everyone looks so weird and... A couple look fine, but most of them look weird. Especially the main protagonists look bland as hell. I mean, you go from James Stewart from the movie. You go from this like bland 30-something motherfucker that seems to have no reason to exist because it's just ugh. And he's also a jerk. So okay. And the point is, they're not aware of the technical limitations because they apparently can render running water.
Oh.
The engine apparently can't handle that. Which, okay, fine. But why are you showing me this scene of a guy taking a drink from the tap as a close-up where it's clear that there's no water running from the tap? So he's just, you know, putting an empty glass and then taking away an empty glass and drinking from an empty glass. And then suddenly there's water inside the glass. Is this scene that important that you have to show me this guy taking a drink? It's not. Spoilers alert, it's not. And there are also some very weird narrative decisions. Like, there's this scene, kind of spoilerish here, but I will try to keep it as brief as possible, where this guy is uncovering a dead body that's covered with a tarp, something like that. And he goes to uncover the tarp, and then, boom, the scene cuts away, and it goes to another scene of this woman in front of a lake, relaxing, and her alarm goes off, and she's like, oh, I have to go back to work. And she's called and say, oh, doctor, you have to go back to work. Yeah, sure, we'll go back to work. And she goes back to work. And then the scene goes back to the guy uncovering the tarp. And you're like, why? Why did you cut away for, like, 1 minute, 2 minutes? What the fuck? I think it makes no sense. I don't know if it will make sense in the end, but I think not, because that scene was so casual that I don't think it would make sense in the end. So I think they went like, oh, the movies do something like that, so we have to do that because this is inspired by a movie. I mean, guys, it's a fucking video game. You don't have to do that. You can do that if it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense because you're not like keeping the suspense, or you're like, oh, you won't know who the dead body is until like 3 hours later. No, I will know that in 2 minutes. So why did you cut away? I don't know. So it's a mess. It's a fucking broken mess, Vertigo. I'm basically, I think, halfway through. I don't know how long it is. I hope it's not that long. I'm getting... I'm still curious, but I have that nagging feeling in my head that this is not going to be worth my time. I know that this will fucking disappoint me in the end. So maybe I will talk about if that happens next time or whatever. I don't know. But yeah, anyone, including you, Jesse, that wants to get into the game, just be aware that, you know, it's a hot mess. So if you're looking for a hot mess, Vertigo would probably be worth your time. Otherwise, probably don't.
How I'm curious how much it is inspired by Alfred Hitchcock's movie. Like, because from what I've seen, I'm like, none of this looks like Vertigo, so I don't understand.
I think there's this... the main gimmick... I'm not going to spoil anything here, but the main gimmick is that the protagonist has memories that are not his, basically he either remembers incorrectly things, or you know, there's something wrong with the things he remembers. So I think that would be the way in which it connects with the movie, in that someone either implanted these memories on him, or someone was, you know, playing, like in the movie, like the trick of pretending to be dead and coming back to life, whatever, you know, that old stuff that happens in the movie. I think that's the connection, but I'm pretty sure it's the only connection. You know, it's also basically an, you know, modern story, so it doesn't take place like in the 60s. So, yes, so I don't think there's that much connection other than that. So, of course, anyone out there might be wondering, why even bother getting the license to the movie if you're just going to do that?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Very thin connection. And I'm like, well, we're here talking about it, so I guess it works.
Well,
what else? What else have you played?
I would like to talk about some more Phoenix Wright.
Oh.
We're
going to bust out the mascot.
Yeah, the Ace Attorney trilogy. I'm on the... Oh, wow. Look at that. Shame it's Miles. But anyway. I'm on the fifth episode of the first game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird. Like, the first four episodes make sense, and then all of a sudden the fifth episode has wacky characters, like a cowboy.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's intentional, but I played the four episodes, then there was the credits and a hard cut, and then there's this extra fifth episode, which I assumed would be shorter, but it's actually really long.
Yeah.
And I don't quite enjoy it so much. I'm just kind of trying to plow through it to get to the next game. I mean,
there's an explanation for that.
Oh, okay, good.
It's not a good explanation, but it's an explanation. So the original trilogy goes back to the GBA, to the Game Boy Advance, so it came out like, wow, 20 years ago at this point, probably. Maybe even more, yeah. 20 years ago, for sure. When, and only in Japan. When Capcom decided to bring it to Western audiences, it did so with the DS. I think it came out pretty early in the DS life cycle, if I'm not mistaken. When they decided to port it over, they didn't do anything much to the trilogy, except like add a few bells and whistles to make sense with the dual screen setup. But they did add a new episode to the first game, which is the one you're playing. So the one you're playing was an extra episode that was developed many years after the originals. I don't remember how many years, but we're talking like 4 or 5 years, right, probably. And it was just developed to use the feature of the Nintendo DS. So to make you blow into the microphone, to make you use the stylus, all that shit.
Okay.
So on Switch, it doesn't make sense because you can do anything. you can blow. It doesn't blow. It doesn't suck. You can close the consoles. You can use the touchscreen, but I think the game that doesn't use the touchscreen at all, because basically the same version as on PC. So it's just like, it removed all that extra features. So yeah, that was like, you can take it as like an extra episode that really has no consequences on the trilogy. So you're just not going to see anything. Like when you start the second game, you're not going to see anything from the fifth episode. But some of the characters will actually come later in the series, will come back, but later after the trilogy. But yeah, it's not that good. Yeah, it brings back a bit the whole first game, but it's fine.
Yeah, it's weird. Feels weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? Have you got anything else?
Well, I've actually finished recently Milky Way Prince. So for once, I'm talking about an Italian game.
Oh, I've never heard of this. So.
Milky Way Prince is a visual novel that was basically developed by one person, It was released by this developer who's called Santa Ragione. And it's pretty interesting. It goes into, it touches on soft, very sensitive topics. So, word warning. So, I mean, self-harm and suicide and abusive relationships. Yeah, there's a whole lot. But, you know, the game is rarely very direct on about those topics. I mean, sometimes, yes, but other times, because it's basically a relationship between this guy and this kind of prince that came down from the stars.
Is this the vampire star? Yeah, Milky
Way. Yeah, that's the one. And basically, a playthrough lasts like 1.5 hours, 2 hours, so pretty short. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's very simple mechanics, because again, it's a visual novel. But the story, I think, is well written. It feels very, very personal, because the guy who wrote it was very young, so pretty sure he was talking about very personal experiences, very personal stuff. So yeah, brave game, one of those things that stays with you. And yes, I like it. Can definitely recommend it if you're looking for something, again, with a word of warning about the topics that I mentioned. But if you're not scared, if you don't mind, then it's a good two hours. I wish that it was easier to like replay it to see the endings, because I don't think there's anything like quality of life things from modern visual novel. I don't think you can even skip text you read. And the developer said, oh, yes, that's normal, because there's a lot of choices in the game, so we couldn't do like any chapters or stuff like that. But at least skipping what you've seen would probably be a good thing. Oh, maybe there is. I haven't seen it. I don't remember, but I don't know. I'm sure it's not there. So anyway, recommended if you're looking for a visual novel that is a bit different.
Before we move on, I want to talk about visual novels, because it's something, I mean, I enjoy reading, you know, quite a lot, but visual novels have never appealed to me. Am I missing out?
Well, Phoenix Wright might be described as a visual novel.
Yeah, that's why I sort of have my interest piqued, because I do enjoy that. So is there a big untapped market? Like, where should I be looking next if I want to explore more?
It's interesting, because weirdly enough, I think the most notorious visual novels are ones that touch upon either like maybe I wouldn't say abusive relationships, but there's a lot of abusive relationships in visual novels, at least the ones I've played. And I haven't been looking for them, you know, because, oh, yes, abusive relationships, I love them. That's just what happened. But yeah, I'm pretty sure there are visual novels that are just, you know, light, fun, I'm pretty sure. But it's a genre that usually deals a lot with some emotional topics and sensitive topics and heavy topics, all of that, which for me, of course, is absolutely fine. But you know, someone might say, I'm here to have fun, not here to cry and feel bad. For example, the one very big visual novel game is The House in Fata Morgana, which has like, I think, the 100% on Metacritic. The Switch version is like, woo. It is a very, very, very good visual novel. I loved it, but it's really emotional. I cried like 4 or 5 times. So it's also very, very long. It's like 30 hours, 35 hours of reading. There are decisions, of course, but mostly. So I don't know. I would say you're missing out, but again, depends on what you're expecting. Because if you're expecting, you know, another Phoenix Wright or something like that, I don't think there's that many. I might be completely wrong here, but I don't really remember visual novels that are like, you know, lighthearted and fun. But there is a very good one now that I think of it. that I would recommend. It's also a bit emotional, but it's mostly lighthearted and fun, which is Steins Gate. Steins Gate is a series. I think there's three.
Steins Gate, yeah, from the anime, right?
Okay. Yeah. It's three titles, if I'm not mistaken. Two or three, I don't remember now. And it's, it can get emotional, and there's some heavy stuff at times there too. But it's mostly lighthearted and sci-fi, time travel and shit. And that's pretty good. I mean, if you liked Phoenix Wright, you would probably like Steins Gate as well.
Is it just a redo of the anime, though?
I think the anime is actually a redo of the game.
Really?
I think so. I think that the game came first. I might be completely wrong, but I think the game came first. The visual novel, of course, is way, way more detailed. There's a lot more stuff than in the anime. I haven't seen all the anime. I've seen a few episodes, but there's quite a lot more stuff. So, if you like Phoenix Wright, I'm pretty sure you will like Steins Gate. But Steins Gate is more traditional. So there are no puzzle, inventory, or objection, or stuff like that. But it's lighthearted and fun. And so, recommend it, definitely, to you or everyone else.
While we're talking about visual novels, I'm pretty sure I've asked this before, but have you played Florence?
I know it, but no, I haven't played it.
Okay, yeah, because that's interested me. I might have to start checking some of these out and report back.
Please do. I mean, it's a genre that I'm not crazy for. I mean, I can't like play three visual novels one after the other because that might be a bit too much. But it's the perfect genre if you like on a portable console like the Switch. If you like traveling around on a train, if you commute to work, whatever, I think it's great. Because it combines, both reading and interacting and stuff. So it works pretty well. I'm not sure I would play it in front of a TV, maybe. I don't know. It makes more sense, at least to me, just personally. It makes more sense to me on a monitor, like in front of a PC or, the PS Vita. That's where I played Steins Gate. Or, portable Switch, stuff like that. On a television, I don't know. I'm not sure I would play, 30-40 hours of visual novel. But yeah, it's a great genre. I like it. Yep. Definitely.
Cool. Have you got anything else to talk about that you've been playing? Because
one very quick thing. Man Eater.
Oh, I want to hear about this.
Man Eater is just a little time waster, because come on, that's what it is. It's not a game you're supposed to take seriously, I think. But it's fun. For anyone that doesn't know, it's a game where you play as a shark, you go around and you eat. You eat people, you eat fishes, you destroy boats, and that's it. What turned me off a little bit? I mean, it was fun. It's just, I played it 1 hour in the evening to cool off, just to have fun, just turn off the brain. But one thing that, rubbed me a bit the wrong way was that it feels a bit like, Goat Simulator clones, like Twitch bait stuff. It has that kind of, like a background noise that you can ignore, that you're playing something that's just going through mechanics that you're really familiar with and you've seen in those kind of games before. But it doesn't last that long, so that you can ignore that noise if you want. I mean, I ignored it. I didn't ignore it that much to actually go ahead and finish it 100% because I wasn't that interested. But I basically, went up to the final boss and then decided that I didn't care that much to see the ending. But it's fine. It's fun. Just go around, eat fishes, and grow, and buy new abilities and stuff, and custom. One thing they missed on, I think, they should have added more customization options to the shark, because that would have been cool. Like change colors and put whatever, I don't know, crazy hats and stuff. That would have been real Twitch bait, but that would have been fun. But there's nothing like that. It's just you can add a few things, but it's just abilities and stuff.
So it's quite basic, just for the memes, eat people.
I wouldn't say 100%. I mean, it's not that stupid or that ridiculous. It can be taken seriously if you want to, but I mean, it's pretty repetitive anyways. Just eat until you gain the level and you're stronger, and then you can take on stronger enemies and rinse and repeat. But again, it's a little time waster, so it's fine. So if anyone's looking for a little time waster for like 1 hour or so in the evening or whatever, it's okay. So I would recommend it.
Interesting. Yeah,
that's my lot.
I think I've had that. You know, it was out on PlayStation Plus. I think maybe I have that somewhere. So I might look into actually giving it a try.
Do a report back. It's I think it will quite like it as a little shit to play.
All right. So that's everything we've been playing then.
Yeah.
Should we start by talking about Xbox, Microsoft buying Activision Blizzard, and what the hell is going on?
And
how we feel about it, really.
Well, as a notorious player of non-AAA games, it doesn't really affect me in any personal way, of course. I think the last Activision, or maybe Blizzard game I played was Diablo 3, maybe, when it came out. Yeah, that's a long time ago. But what I think is interesting about that news is the fact that clearly Microsoft is adding to use Game Pass as a sort of like bottleneck, so that if a game, I mean, just to fight against Steam, probably at this point also, because it's like, if your game is not available on Game Pass on day one, will people actually care to buy it? Because if you've been waiting years to play this fucking game, it's not on Game Pass, yeah, you probably will go out of your way to buy it, sure. But if it's not that kind of game, and there's not that many games that people are like tearing their hair out to play, I mean, maybe, yeah, a couple of them. I can think of a couple, three maybe, but not any more than that. So if your game is not that kind of big excitement, big news, big announcement, if it's not a Game Pass, that could be beginning to be a problem, because you're basically left out. I mean, what other choice do you have? Yes, you can be on Steam, sure. But on Steam, you have to fight against the algorithm. You have to try to get positive reviews and stuff. So it's a bit of a problem. While Game Pass is just game, it's just there. It's available and people will play it. I have read a few things about what kind of revenues developers expect from their game being on Game Pass and stuff, but I'm still not 100% sure how much money they're actually getting from Game Pass, that if it makes sense, I think, for all kinds of games to be on Game Pass.
Do
you know anything about
this? Yeah. So the research kind of shows, obviously not all cases, but games that come to Game Pass actually sell more in the long run too, because people, for some reason, you know, I mean, people in the know, like us, or people listening and watching this, you know, we're probably smart enough to say, oh, it's on Game Pass, you know, why would I buy that? But some people just buy like 2 games a year, and maybe they just want to buy that game and they don't want to subscribe to Game Pass because they don't play all the time. And then you also have the marketing aspect in that when a game comes to Game Pass, no matter how big it is, whether it's an indie game or a AAA, it gets a lot of Microsoft marketing. And if you've ever looked at Idea Xbox, which is the team that handles indie games at Xbox, they have a live stream on Twitch and YouTube. They employ a live streamer to stream all the games coming to Game Pass and coming out and things like that. And it gets a lot of marketing for free. So if you are, and that's why you see a lot of indie games coming to Game Pass when they release, because, you know, they don't have to then pay for their own marketing because they get the best of both worlds in that Microsoft will market their game. And, you know, you can play it on the Xbox or the PC if you have Game Pass. But then there's a whole chunk of people who only have a PlayStation, so they'll have to buy the game. But it generates like reviews and a lot of interest in these smaller games that otherwise would have got buried, and seems to generate them more money in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because marketing has been, especially for India, so it's always been a big problem. This is something I've talked about on the Simple Podcast, for example, with a lot of developers. But yeah, basically, you come to make a game, and 99% of the time, you'd know nothing about marketing. And so it's either you just find a publisher and the publisher does it for you, even though that may also create problems. For example, let's look at Inscription. Otherwise, you have to do it yourself. And it's just basically, try and fail, because that's what happened. Because there's no special rule on marketing a game. I mean, whatever we say today, you know, what we think would be the right way to market an adventure game or whatever might not be true in like a week. So if you like have to market a game for 6 months, you have to change tactics. You have to work around the system. You have to, you know, if you go on social media, you have to use a different tactics for every social media. If you just rely on streamers, you have to pick the right streamer. You have to pick, you have to know your way around Twitch. It's a lot of stuff. So, yeah, I can understand that. Of course, Game Pass solves a lot of these problems. So developers are happy and everyone is happy. But why aren't we happy? Because that fucking creates a monopoly. And that's not a good thing, I think. That's been shown again and again in other not be a good thing. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not that enthusiastic about.
I mean, yeah, this is the problem, right? That what Microsoft and Xbox and Phil Spencer are doing is fantastic for a consumer at the moment. But the problem is, it's the long game, right? So now they've bought Activision Blizzard. Bobby Kotick, not getting fired yet. They've got a whole host of problems there, but they're now going to have access to Call of Duty. They're going to have access to own Overwatch, World of Warcraft, all of these important big games, which, you know, we might see World of Warcraft subscriptions roll into Game Pass now. And they're like building this big empire. But the problem with that is everyone thinks it's good now, but in 5 to 10 years time, when they are a big monopoly, they can set the price at whatever they want. You know, our Game Pass is great at, you know, $15, £10.99 a month at the moment. But once they own lots of developers or have a lot of a large user base of Game Pass, they can just up their prices to what they want, and then people will slowly say, "Oh, it's only an extra $2 or $3," you know. Oh, and they'll make the excuses for Microsoft, and
people love making excuses for big companies.
Yeah, I mean, it's just business, right? It's good business practice. There'll inevitably be more tiers of Game Pass where you can get more things thrown in. And it's great for a consumer now, but we'll just have to see what happens.
What I'm worried about, basically, because I'm not worried about the price, but I'm worried about what kind of rules would Microsoft set with Game Pass. I mean, when is a game allowed on Game Pass? When it's not allowed on Game Pass? Because I admit I'm ignorant of this, but there surely are rules, because they can't, of course, like accept, you know, games that deal with borderline topics or sexual games, or I mean, maybe not even sexual games, but games that feature like sexual components. Would they go there? Probably don't. I don't think so. So what worries me more than the price is, what kind of rules are they setting? What kind
access,
of... what kind of access? Because that's what happens with a monopoly. Because when you're one of the very big players in that, the presence of one media product, be that a song on Spotify, And whoa, there would be much to say about Spotify, but yeah, I'll shut up. So being a sucker on Spotify or a game on Game Pass, and I can't actually add it on Game Pass because, I don't know, for whatever rule, or my game is removed from Game Pass after a month because, I don't know, something happened. Today might not be a big problem. Might be a problem, but not the end of the world. In 5 years, might be quite problematic, especially if a developer is not that big and, you know, it relies on Game Pass doing the marketing and bringing in the money, the revenue. So there's a lot actually to be worried about, and I'm not really looking forward to being under the control of Microsoft again.
No, but this also...
The operating system is enough, thank you very much.
Well, yeah, but I mean, this also rolls into now, you know, the news that Sony has bought Bungie. So now we're seeing these two pillars, you know, kind of grow up. And I mean, I like to compare it to a lot like, you know, the real world, in that the middle class erosion. There's just like very rich people and very poor people. And it's the same with games, you know, all those middle mid-level studios, not even mid-level, big studios, Activision Blizzard, are now being bought by huge conglomerates. You know, and now, I mean, Sony buying Bungie is a much smaller deal than, you know, yeah, the other one. But it shows intent. Like, there was the news that Sony has a whole over 10 live service games planned between now and, like, 2026. Mm-hmm. And it's like, do we really want more live service trash? Like, just to design to, like, get people's money?
Well, if you ask me, God, no. But I don't know. I guess people want them. Maybe, again, younger gamers that they've grown accustomed to this kind of services, to, like, Fortnite kind of, you know, games as services. So, yes. But the problem is that currently Sony's big, like, PlayStation Plus service basically sucks.
Yes.
I mean, it would suck without Game Pass. But with Game Pass, already a big thing, it sucks big time. I mean, come on. I actually used to be subscribed to PlayStation Plus. I think it was like 4 years ago. But that, you know, back then they gave you like each month.
Oh, it was good. Yeah.
Yeah, gave you. Lent you, maybe. 2 Vita games, 2 PS3 games, 2 PS4 games. It was like 6 games a month with all consoles that I had and used. So I was like, well, that's a good deal. There was nothing else also at the time. So it was a good deal. It was like €4 a month, €5 a month, maybe, you know, if you bought the annual plan, of course. Yeah, pretty good. But since then, it's basically gone downhill. They removed mostly everything. I mean, I think right now it's just like 2 PS4 games and 2 PS5 games, maybe. I don't know. So anyway, it sucks. And yeah, they have to do something to bring it back to speed, otherwise it...
Yeah, they really are behind. And I've always been more of a fan of Sony games. But Microsoft, it's like, it's even given me very little. I'm like, why? It's on Game Pass. I can't play. I'm just not going to buy it on my PlayStation just to have it on my PlayStation. It's on Game Pass. Or they're just not doing anything exciting. I think Sony's reliance on this traditional, we make huge games, is fine. But these games only come out once every, like, 5 years. And it's a little bit like Nintendo. Like, I think Nintendo is probably doing the smartest thing. They're just kind of doing their own thing and that. But we're also seeing the same problem with Nintendo, who recently came out and said they're not interested in getting into an arms race with Microsoft and Sony. You know, they're just going to stick to their own little niche, and that's fine, and that's what people love them for. But they need more games. Everyone needs more games. Like, there's so many games on Game Pass that I haven't even tried. So I'm not even going to start going elsewhere. Why don't we have a new Mario Kart? Why don't we have a new this and that? And they have so many franchises. They could be just absolutely dominating and getting everyone excited. I just... there's just very little to be excited about in video games lately. You know, no one's really announcing anything interesting, or it's so far away, or it's, you know, God of War Ragnarok. When is it coming out? Nobody knows.
GTA 6.
Oh, yay. GTA 6.
There's going to be another GTA.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. We're going to go again. Criminals and Mafia and Gabagoo. Yay, I can't wait.
I mean, I still maintain the last interesting like IP to come out was Splatoon. And I also because of but I mean it, you know, it's like original. Like I want companies to come out with some original concepts, and I think that's probably why indie games are still by far the most interesting games, because at least they try something new.
Yeah, the most interesting games, because basically AAA barely tries. I mean, AAA is just, we have this big franchise, let's just stick to it and, you know, milk it for like the next 15 years. And also while barely releasing a game. It's just like about milking it as much as possible. Like, yeah, you know, GTA 5, how many fucking years has that been milked? I mean, that cow is a zombie cow at this point. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
or Skyrim. I mean, what the fuck?
It feels very much like the business has killed the creativity of video games in general. No, that's what I was saying.
No, I think that's something that it's been an opinion that's been going on for quite a while. I mean, I heard that even back in the like late 90s. So it's nothing new, but the point is that the stakes have changed since then. I mean, back then the industry was pretty small. Now it's huge, and it's just, you know, there's everyone's a gamer, apparently, and we as an industry earn more than Hollywood stuff. So yeah, the stakes are higher, and the problem when the stakes are higher, of course, is every move is measured. Try to be as economically feasible and sensible as possible. So again, every title that is announced or released or under development has to make sense first economically, and then for all the other reasons. So that's why basically they milk each franchise as much as possible without releasing anything new or anything groundbreaking or stuff like that. I mean, I was even surprised when they rebooted God of War. I mean, it made sense. Course, but I was kind of surprised because I thought they would be still going with the old Kratos and maybe just dial it back a bit, make it a little bit less edgy, for sure. But I wasn't expecting the whole reboot, Viking stuff and shit. So that was kind of surprising. But yeah, I don't think we're going to see anything new for like that in the next few years, because yeah, the stakes are so much high and no one wants to risk it. So yeah, video game sucks.
You heard it here. Right. So, I mean, should we wrap things up?
Yes. Let's wrap things up. I think we've, you know, rambled on enough. So everyone, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching our ugly mugs moving on the screen. And we'll be back with you with something new, hopefully a guest. And yeah.